and gentlemen, welcome to WinCon. My name is Zach Donish, and I'm your host. Here with me, Matt Stoklosa. Matt, how you doing?
I'm great, Zach. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay. You listen to MTG WinCon, where we're helping you climb higher in the rankings on MTGO, place higher in FMM, and be a better card slinger. You ready to talk about some magic, Matt?
Oh, I'm more than ready. I've had a rough day of exams, and I just would love nothing better than talk about magic with you, Zach.
Oh, that's so sweet of you. So if you want to get in contact with us, since we're a relatively new show and we're always looking for feedback, you can email us at mtgwincon@gmail.com. That's mtgwincon@gmail.com. And my Twitter handle is HelloZado, Z-A-D-O. What's your Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle is TheStocky, T-H-E-S-T-O-C-K-Y.
I'm beginning to think that that's kind of your go-to handle anywhere.
It is for everything. So if you ever want to try and get in contact with me in any way, shape, or form, that's a good place to start.
All right, yeah, that sounds good. I'm just going to like type in TheStocky everywhere, like livejournal.com/TheStocky, and read all of your like preteen woes.
Pretty much, yeah. I think don't go there. That was a dark time in my life.
That is an excellent idea. Okay, so if I give you a card, how will you tell me how bad or good it is?
Sure.
All right, Seller of Songbirds. What do you think about it in Limited?
I don't like it. I've seen people play it, but not really to any value, in my opinion.
Value? You kidding me? You get a 1/1 white bird.
But it... You can... I just know. I don't know. I don't like it.
Half the time... You ever seen Arrested Development?
No, I have not.
Okay, in Arrested Development, there's this character named Job, and he does magic tricks, magic illusions. There's this one episode where he has a dove, and he puts it in a bag, but it dies. It asphyxiates, and he goes to release the dove as part of a trick, and he kind of dumps the bag out, and there's a dead dove in the bag. And that's kind of how I feel like the bird in Seller of Songbirds is. Unless you've got like a really good populate engine, it's just this dead dove that just kind of falls out of your 1/2 for three, you know?
Yeah.
For three mana. It's just like, what? Why?
I mean, even if you do have that good populate engine, I just feel like there's so many better things to be doing with it, and I don't know.
Yeah, the one place I found that it's actually kind of good is in, like, when you scavenge tokens onto it, or you're able to just make it bigger than it really is, maybe with, you know, some random enchantment or something, or, you know, at least you can block the 1/3/1 in the sky, the, man, I was doing...
Leah Sky Knight, yeah.
Yeah, Leah Sky Knight. You know, okay, so a little disclaimer here. We actually recorded an episode 2. This is episode 2, by the way, of MTG WinCon. And we had recorded an episode 2, but my microphone apparently doesn't like to pick up when I'm about, you know, a couple inches away. And so I kind of have to, like, eat the microphone at this point for it to really pick up on anything. And so the whole time I couldn't remember names of cards, which is funny because I draft, you know, once or twice a week at least. And I'm always thinking about Magic and tinkering and listening to tons of other podcasts. And so every single card... Matt was just filling in the info, so I'm kind of glad that that episode isn't released, but as you can already tell, I'm beginning that all over again.
Yeah, I mean, I just like to know my cards, because I feel the more you familiarize yourself with a set, and just knowing the card names as a good start just really helps you, like, just start thinking about the cards, where they interact, so that's one thing I try to make sure I at least do, is just pick up on the card names and just try and remember them as best as possible, because that's a good place to start when you're trying to just analyze the set, is know all the cards.
I totally agree, and especially I know that you listened to the entire Limited Resources set review, and I've listened to it, but most of it was at work, and so I was half paying attention to Marshall and John, and kind of half in my work, you know, pretending to be productive. So you kind of have that advantage going into it, but... You know, I've listened to so many of their set reviews that I'm able to look at a card and to think about what they would say about it and kind of just go from there. And I've been wrong on several occasions with some of these cards in Return to Ravnica, but, you know, I'm happy playing the key runes. I'm happy playing Pithing Needle out of the sideboard, which is exactly what they were saying, so...
Yep.
Yeah, but have you gotten a chance to draft a lot?
I have not drafted... I've drafted enough.
Enough, I think.
Yeah, I need to definitely do the more. I've just been busy with some exams and stuff, but this next week I should be free to start drafting my heart out. So hopefully, I've the drafts have been hit or miss. The first draft I did was a hit. I was running a blue-white Flyers deck, which people always joke is kind of my default, which I guess it kind of is. And I like that deck well enough. And then the second draft was Rakdos. I was really excited because I'm like, I'm finally drafting Rakdos. I first picked Carnival Hellsteed. But then that draft, I went 0-3. And from that draft, what I mainly picked up was you need to beat Selesnya quickly. Otherwise, once they hit that 4 mana, they'll just start generating tokens left and right, and they'll stabilize way quicker than you can try and take them out.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I mean, it's you either have to beat them before they can stabilize, or you have to prevent them from kind of getting the tempo engine started and the populate engine going, because if you can't get rid of those tokens, even you know with bounce or just have a bigger attacker than they do, you know they're just gonna be able to overrun you with a ton of creatures, and you know at some point they're gonna get their +1/+1 counters out on the field from the green scavenge guys that they just you know kind of randomly throw in. Corrosive Monitor, I believe it is like the 4 mana, and you pay 6 to scavenge it, and it's a 3/3 with trample, right?
Yeah.
So he wants to be scavenged onto, and then scavenged when he dies.
Yeah.
And that guy, you know, I found he's very serviceable. Like I would be happy picking him, you know, between 7th and 10th. I think like just randomly value in my Selesnya deck. If I wasn't thinking about Golgari, which by the way, Golgari just has not been good to me, and it has not been good to many people. It is like the least winning deck in Return to Ravnica Limited, which is surprising because Izzet is so hard to play.
Yeah, I was really surprised. When I first saw Golgari, you know, I figured it would be slow, but I didn't think it would be as slow as it's turning out to be. And really the only thing I see it as is a splash if you pick up a Dreadmangler or a Sluiceway Scorpion.
Both of those are excellent cards in like a Rakdos deck.
Yeah, definitely, and then you just take those, because those, they're still good, efficient, they're great creatures, and then their scavenge costs are pretty reasonable, so they're those two, and like you said, Corrosive Monitor, there are a couple of them that you just like can pick up for that extra value in either your Rakdos deck or your Selesnya deck, but really, Golgari just doesn't have enough going for it where it can just get through, because it's a bit too slow.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and it just, the scavenge costs so much, and you have to play with Axebane Guardians, which don't block anything. It's a rough day to be a Golgari player. But it does make a great splash, especially if you're going to try and splash black a little bit, because then you have access to some higher quality removal.
Yep.
You splash green, you have access to a ton of pump spells, which really, honestly, in Return to Ravnica, pump spells I value almost as high as, you know, pretty good removal. Just thinking about what they can do for you, and the fact that they have to kind of act like removal most of the time.
Yep.
Rather than just, you know, cracking in, okay, so I get one guy in, you're at 3 health, right, and I attack with, you know, enough cards that I can get a 2-2 in, and I giant growth a 2-2 and I win the game. Like, I think that happens just as much as, you know, I block with my 1-1 against your 3-3 and I giant growth the 1-1 and be 1-for-1, but I keep my card, you know, whether it's with the Centaur's Herald, and I get the, you know, just sacrifice him for 3 and get that 3-3. On the battlefield,
yep.
You know, it's more value added on to any green deck, you know, any Selesnya, or you know, even if you're trying to splash green into a Rakdos deck. But I think that Golgari is a good splash, but if you get the right kind of, if all the cards fall your way, you can certainly get a very good Golgari deck.
Yeah, it needs to really fall your way in a big way, and you need to just pick up all that stuff. But that being said, you know, since Golgari, it's right now the worst, and people are having trouble with it, that does mean that there is a better chance that you can get some of those things going your way. So it's definitely not something that you should be afraid to go Golgari. If you can see it's completely open, and you're just getting past all the elements you think you need for a good Golgari deck, then by all means, go for it, because no one will be expecting it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, there are a ton of great Golgari cards out there. You just kind of have to make things work. I mean, in terms of just the rares, you look at stuff like Deathrite Shaman, which isn't quite a bomb in limited, but it's still very good, especially in the long game, if you can force the long game with some bigger creatures. And I think at some point, we're going to see people starting to play That giant ooze, the one in black, not the gobbling ooze, but if I can find him here in the big list, he's the 2-6, the 2-6 ooze. Like, I think that in some ways he's going to become kind of an important sideboard card against really aggressive Rakdos decks. Even the Selesnya deck in the early stages, if you can on turn 5 play, it's a Catacomb Slug is what the card I'm trying to think of. Yeah, and, he doesn't really kill much in Selesnya, but in Rakdos, he holds back a lot of the early threats from, continuing the beatdown if you can survive until turn 5, or you can ramp up into that. I think the Catacomb Slug, kind of like I was talking about Angel of Glory's Rise on our Apocryphide cast, I've actually seen lists now with Angel of Glory's Rise. I don't know if I was talking about that on the second cast or if I was talking about that on our first one. But I really think that Angel of Glory's Rise is going to become a huge card in Standard. And similarly, I think that we've underrated a little bit Catacomb Slug. He's not a very good blocker in terms of trading or, killing a creature, attacking creature. He doesn't threaten much, but he's a wall that can turn into a very big attacker given a little bit of that late-game scavenge.
Yeah. And, I mean, sometimes you don't even need them to kill. When I was playing my Rakdos deck, one of the big things that I just had issues with were just their big things that I couldn't get through just because my guys weren't good enough. Or, in one game, the guy had a Trussle Troll, which, it's not that impressive, but I was sitting there with my Carnival Hellsteed. I couldn't swing in because all he would do was block it and then just regenerate it. So, I mean, sometimes those cards are very necessary against that Rakdos deck, as I learned, because eventually I would just hit a wall. I would get in there for massive damage at the beginning. They would throw down their wall, and I couldn't do that last 8 or so damage to them.
Yeah, I think Trestle Troll is an interesting card. Just looking at it here, it's 3 mana and you get a 1/4, which isn't that impressive. But what's impressive about it is it has reach. And so you can block most of, it blocks the Lee of Sky Knight perfectly.
Yep.
You can't attack him with Lee of Sky Knight, and they're the same mana cost. Converted mana cost, that is. And not only can he block those bigger flyers, but he can also regenerate. And so even against Selesnya, where you have these 3/3s on the ground, he's doing work. Because he can block at least one of them, and then you throw regenerate on there, and he can handle, all the 8/8 tramplers that end up when, the crazy good running good Selesnya decks that are drafted. I think Trestle Troll is a bit underrated, and I've heard some talk about him lately being so, but he just doesn't have a fit outside of Golgari or splashing that black in a junk tokens deck if you want to play a little Selesnya and have some defense on the ground. I just, unless you're going to jam him into a Rakdos deck that wants to just kind of have the Trestle Trolls back to block, and you're swinging in with your Hellhole Flailers and everybody, he's an awkward card, I think, at this point, while we're still trying to figure out Golgari.
Yeah, he's awkward, but he's awkward in a way that just seems to work, and that regeneration, it's not that expensive, so they can sit there, and then he's also just out of the range of, Annihilating Fire and stuff, so you can't just remove him anyway. And so he can be a bit difficult to answer if you're that Rakdos deck that just wants to get through, or that Selesnya deck that will probably have no real removal for him.
Yeah, and even if you pump up, even if you pump him up your creature to try and deal with him, he can always just regenerate.
Yes.
That's all you can just kind of bow your head to the guy and find another way around him or waste some higher quality removal on him.
Definitely. And then putting that roadblock up there for those fast decks that are Rakdos or maybe a Selesnya deck that just doesn't have that end condition, once you throw up that wall, you just stop all their momentum and they're going to have a hard time recovering. Even once they do figure out a way to remove that Trestle Troll, they're going to have put so much effort into it. Or not even just Trestle Troll, any kind of wall that stops them, they're going to put so much effort into it that it's going to take them a while to then regain either their populate engine or get more of their guys out there if their Rakdos unleashed to attack.
Yeah, speaking of walls, what do you think about Doorkeeper?
I've heard a lot of people talk about liking him.
Yeah, the Doorkeeper deck is apparently a thing.
Yeah, and I mean, the people were talking about that, how a doorkeeper deck would be a thing, and I know there were some people that were, like, excited for it, and I never really thought anything of it, but apparently people are, like, doing a lot of work with Axebane Guardian and Doorkeeper, just going, putting down your Axebane Guardian, then Doorkeeper, and then just from there, just either milling them a lot or just holding down the ground and no one can get through, and you have this Doorkeeper, or not Doorkeeper, Axebane Guardian tapping for all the mana you'll need, so I've heard interesting things. I haven't tried it yet, but...
Yeah, it just seems like it needs one big wall in the way, so maybe a hover barrier or, you know, Azor's Elocutors, if you want to, you know, talk about a rare that would fit nicely into blocking some of those centaurs of 3/3s. I mean, 4 toughness is that magic number that we've heard talked about, at least in Limited, and Doorkeeper's got it. He seems to fit really well. He's cheap. He's 1 in a blue with Defender. What more could you ask for an 0/4? And he's got that little ability there that if you have, like, a Trestle Troll, if you have, you know, a couple other Axebane Guardian, maybe, or the...
Gatekeeper Vine.
Yeah, all these cards that help you ramp up to get you the mana, Doorkeeper's going to be able to use all that mana. He's going to be able to really slow down your opponent's attack, especially combined with a few of the other mill cards in the set. You know, there probably isn't a viable mill deck at this point, but believe me, when Simic comes out in Gatecrash, I will be drafting myself some Doorkeepers, when we draft all 3 sets at once.
Yeah,
and that'll be fun, and it'll be fun to pick up, you know, maybe 2 Doorkeepers out of the 8 packs, and just go to town milling people and playing my Dimir Simic crossover, and just loving it.
Yeah, and this Defender deck seems to actually be there. I mean, I've also heard people talk about how they'll take Defenders and then use Axebane Guardian to just ramp up. If they do want to actually do a Golgari deck, they'll sit there and they'll ramp up to those big, awkward creatures that Golgari has and then use them. So, I mean, I've heard these things are there. I guess you just need to figure out which of these Defenders are actually good. I'm liking Axebane Guardian and Doorkeeper personally myself for that deck, but who knows what people will figure out.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the fun of, like, exploring formats, and I know that there was an old Limited Resources where Brian David Marshall came on and talked all about this crazy new deck he called the Spider Spawning deck in Innistrad.
Spider Spawning.
Oh, man. That deck was so much fun to play because you could literally force the Spider Spawning deck, and as long as you got a couple of key cards, you could make it work over and over again. And I played some hilariously fun decks in Innistrad Limited. And if you look at my MTGO account, I have crazy amounts of Innistrad cards just sitting around, you know, in the upper 30s and 40s of certain commons, which isn't a lot compared to some people, but, you know, compared to my other sets and compared to a lot of people who draft online, Innistrad was my favorite set, and you can tell.
Yeah.
But while we're kind of brewing a little bit on decks here, at least in a limited sense, let's kind of shift over to Standard a bit. Earlier in the week, you sent me a deck list. And I've got it pulled up here, at least the version you sent me over Facebook. You do this from time to time. You're like, I feel like brewing a white-blue deck. And you send me a white-blue deck in the Facebook. And I give you some feedback on it. You take it back into your little garage, and you fix it up, and you send it back. And I say, okay, looks a little better. Here's some more feedback. So why don't you go ahead and read me this list here. The deck title is very bland, unfortunately. It is Contain.
Yeah, I usually come up with better ones. This one, I was just like, no, time for business. Let's figure this out.
Contain.
Yep.
Could be, you know, it is blue-white, so you could think of some sort of water or, I don't know, what white source would detain you. The long, hard arm of the law. Something a vague innuendo, maybe. But deck name aside, go ahead and read me this list, and we'll go ahead and talk about some changes you can make.
All right, yeah. Let's
try and make it better and more competitive in, like, an FNM standard environment. Something that newer players... I know we'd already talked about this earlier before the show, but the listeners haven't heard. And it's all about the listeners, right?
All about you guys.
Exactly. So, you know, one of the things that newer players like to do is they like to build decks. Who doesn't? I mean, part of the fun of EDH is building your own deck. EDH, Elder Dragon, Highlander, or Commander, as some of you might know it. It's building your own deck and having these cool interactions that you figured out. Well, that you figured out that other people have figured out ages ago, and you're just catching up. And so part of that fun, though, is like building a deck and having your creation win. And I totally get this. I have built decks all the time to play against friends, and I've even tried a few of them in FNM to hilarious failure, not realizing that Slagstorm also hits myself. I ultimated Tameo and went Slagstorm, Slagstorm, Slagstorm. Oh, I'm almost dead. Yeah, that was a good time. But, you know, and you're no different than me, Matt, in that you are definitely a Johnny at heart, and you love to, you know, build new decks and try them out, but you also want to win. And you want to win in style, but you also want to win with your creation.
Yep.
And so I suppose just go ahead and read your creation here, and we can talk about how to kind of tweak it a little bit and some things to think about, especially for newer players, when it comes to building your own deck and trying to make it, at the very least, competitive enough for your FNM environment.
Yeah. So I'll read it off here. This deck list has changed probably like 10 times in the last week, so
yeah, hopefully I have the right version in front of me here.
I have the latest one that I sent you, so yeah, you should be good.
Perfect.
So we'll start off with the creatures. There are 22 of them. 4 Azorius Arresters, 4 Azorius Justiciars, 4 Champion of the Parish, 4 Liev Sky Knight, 2 Precinct Captains, 2 Restoration Angels, 2 Skymark Rocks. Then onto the enchantments, we have 4 Detention Spheres. On to instants, we have 4 Cloud Shifts and 2 Syncopates. Sorceries, 1 Entreat the Angels and 4 Inaction Injunction. And then for land, we have 4 Azorius Guildgates, 4 Hallowed Fountains, 6 Islands, 9 Plains. So, when I sat down and started working on this deck, basically, it started off very rough because I started doing it right as soon as... like right after the pre-release, the next day.
I remember some of the earlier versions of this deck, yeah.
Yes, right when I saw the Detain mechanic, because it really spoke to me. I was like, I really like this, so I just started throwing Detain things in there. I was like, yeah, let's go, let's figure this out. So I basically just started off with that, and I kind of had in mind sort of a Delver-ish type deck format, where it's cheap, small creatures, and trying to just constantly tempo. Whereas Delver tried to tempo with its really cheap instants and sorceries that would act as its removal, I was going to try and use the Detain mechanic as my tempo to sit there and use really cheap Detain creatures and just keep detaining and getting all these small creatures through for damage that would eventually add up.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when sitting here and looking at this deck, you know, this week is actually Azorius week for the Mothership, so they're sitting there...
Week, man.
Yeah, so they're sitting there talking about all their decks, and looking at decks that people made with it really got me thinking, and I kind of see several different ways this deck can go. One way is the very aggressive deck that I kind of have here, where it's mainly creature-based. They sit there with Champion of the Parish and basically all the really cheap, small Azorius humans, and they just sit there and constantly just beat down their humans. I think they had like 24 creatures total in there, and they were just constantly beating. From there, the other deck I've seen is more of a controlling thing where you use more of the blue counterspell side to it. So they're running Syncopates and Dissipates and all these other counterspells, and then just getting through with a couple of their small things. And then I've also seen some, you know, like blue-white tokens decks that people have made using this. So there are kind of 4 directions I see this going, but right now the main one is probably the more aggressive one. I'm really liking the Champion of Parish and using all the humans to get him through.
Mm-hmm. So I think if we're going to look at this deck kind of from a Delver-esque, you know, from the last season standard, you know, one of the keys to Delver, and I think most new players who have ever heard of Delver really know this, that Delver was based on tempo. And when you looked at the cards in Delver, and you specifically looked at the creatures and the instants that you were playing in Delver, you saw something that was very interesting, because all the instants in Delver, you know, besides Mana Leak and a couple, you know, choice cases here and there, they're all one mana. One mana instances. So if you look at your deck, you've got 4 Cloud Shift, which is all one mana, and you've got 2 Syncopates as well, which it can be, you know, 2 mana, it can be more, depending on, you know, when you need it, what your opponent's doing, and they're almost like little miser syncopates, so when your opponent isn't expecting it, you can just go, oh, you want to play a Thrag Tusk and tap out? Sure, here's my syncopate. And that's kind of a nice thing to have. So in terms of your instants, they look great, just from a lower cost perspective. but you might even benefit from more.
Yeah.
And then looking at your creatures. Now, here's, I think, where I have the biggest problem with the deck. From a tempo perspective, if you look at Delver, a lot of Delver lists played Restoration Angel. And they played Restoration Angel to... sometimes they would blink a Geisisaint Traft that was attacking, and that would save the Geisisaint Traft, but the Angel Token would still be tapped and attacking. And so you would swing with the Angel Token and get 4 damage in, and you'd reset your Geisisaint Traft so that then next turn you could also attack with the Geisisaint Traft and get 4 more damage in, and either just sacrifice the Geist, you know, if you were just getting so close to winning that it was, you know, no big deal to lose your 2-2. Or you would just be able to swing in again with a Restoration Angel or some other blink spell like an Unsummon or... I can't remember the spell from Scars of Mirrodin block that was a Vapor Snag. That's it. Took me a second. So all those, I think, Unsummon spells really benefit you in terms of tempo because you're really throwing your opponent off. You're almost, in a way, spending a card to time walk them if they've tapped out for those kind of cards that they're playing. And when you're trying to get damage in super early with the Champion of the Parish, you know, you go turn 1 Champion, turn 2 Arrester, maybe for no value, or you go turn 2 Precinct Captain, and now you've got a 2-2 Champion of the Parish that you attack with. Turn 3, you go Lee of Sky Knight and detain one of their creatures. Then you can go, you know, that you have a 3-3 Champion and a 2-2 Precinct Captain, and now you're attacking for 5, plus you get to put a white soldier creature token onto the battlefield. Now you're really getting a terrifying board presence. So in terms of the champion, the Sky Knight, the captain, the arrester, they all look good. The card that doesn't really fit, and actually the two cards that don't really fit to me, are the Skymark Rock and the Justiciar. And mostly because they're at 4 mana, and they're a little prohibitive in their casting costs. With the deck you have here, you're playing 4 Hollowed Fountains and 4 Guild Gates, which is fine. You know, you could go turn 1 Guild Gate, turn 2 Champion of the Parish, Champion of the Parish. Or, you know, and I think you might benefit from 4 Doom Traveler as well. Because not only are you getting 4 more humans in your deck, but you're also getting 4 more spirits that you can use to just kind of swing in and deal, you know, a couple more points of damage, which is exactly what your deck wants to do. So I think bumping up the number of Precinct Captains to 4, losing the Skymark Rocks and the Justiciars, you know, you might not want to lose all the Justiciars because sometimes it's nice to have that ability to get a, kind of that 2-for-1 with Detain that he gives you. But you definitely don't want 4 because 4 is going to kind of guarantee that you're going to see him a lot in your draws, and you don't want to be looking at a white-white 2 casting cost when you want to go, you know, 2 double champion into, you know, Sky Knight, detain your opponent's zombie or whatever is on the table, and just crack in for the win.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other thing I think is a bit heavy. You're a bit heavy on Detention Spheres. You know, right? Detention Sphere is a very reactionary card, and if you're looking to get rid of Thragtusks, that's great. But, you know, it doesn't deal with the Thragtusk token. What deals with Thragtusk is Syncopate. And counter magic. And so you may want to look at maybe boarding in some counter magic to deal with a Thragtusk because, you know, they can cast a Thragtusk, but if you've just got 2 mana open and you go Essence Scatter, that's going to hurt. That's going to hurt a lot when they try and get, you know, resolve their Thragtusk and you're like, not on my battlefield. And they're already down to, like, you know, they're hoping to stabilize in the life swing that a Thragtusk will give them. You know, you can really crack in, with a bit more counter magic in this deck and throw some opponents off guard in a metagame right now, like a worldwide magic metagame that doesn't like counter spells at this point.
Yeah.
So I think what you really should focus on with your deck is finding a point to win at. And the one thing that's preventing you from winning is that you need the Champion of the Parish. That's kind of your win condition. You're going to build up a champion, you're going to detain with some of your other guys, you're going to crack in, and you're going to win on tempo. And that's clearly the goal here. But what you're missing, I think, in the creature department is those Geist of Saint Traft. And it's a carryover from Delver. It's a very strong card, but it's also an expensive card, and I can understand kind of the hesitation when, you know, newer players, you know, like yourself, don't really want to blow $120+ on a Geisesane draft or a playset of them. And that's completely understandable because they are very expensive and sometimes are hard to get. But if you're going to really try and be competitive with this deck, I think it needs those Geists to give yourself a very good win condition. And to go along with those Geists, because of the lack of removal that's being played, you could also realistically look at attaching the balloon pants to the Geisesane Trap. The +2/+2 in flying from Innistrad.
Spectral Flight.
Yeah.
Throw
a Spectral Flight onto your Geist and balloon pants him up, and I think that would just be a very good strategy, especially when you can balloon pants a champion to the parish, and, you know, he's already a 3/3 or a 4/4, and now you're cracking in for 6 in the air every turn. That's a pretty disgusting play. So I think that you have a chance to really kind of reduce some of the chaff and get the wheat that you're looking for out of this deck, which is really that the tempo plays that you're gunning for. And, of course, you know, I don't think you read the sideboard out loud.
That's just kind of a mess right now.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it. Like, you have 2 Oblivion Ring, which you don't really need with the Detention Spheres. The Arcana Triumvirate, I laughed at. A bit too expensive for your tempo deck. The Dryabilitan, I think, is a good play. You get that 2/1 2/1 creature, which is I can't think of the name of the card. Man, I get on air and I just forget all names of all cards ever. But it's the soldier from M11, the 2/1 for
Elite Vanguard.
Yeah, there you go, dude. You're just gonna be my names guy.
All day.
Like, I've played Magic for a lot longer than you, and you're just like right there with the names. So I'm impressed with you, sir.
Thanks. Then, I try.
Yeah, the Supreme Verde, the delicious Taco Bell meal. I think, you know, I don't know if a 4 of in the sideboard is where you want to be, but I think against certain decks, an Uncounterable Wrath is a good place to start in terms of sideboarding.
Yeah.
And I think that you have the Entreat the Angels in the main deck. And I think that against control decks, or at least decks that utilize a lot of counter magic, getting that Entreat the Angels into the sideboard, you know, having 2 in the sideboard to board in, and maybe 2 or 3 Supreme Verdicts, in that sideboard, they can kind of help clear out the board when your opponent kind of has a couple of the tough creatures you just can't deal with, just because you have no removal in this deck besides Detain guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, the big things you should focus on when you kind of revise this deck, and what newer players should focus on, is looking at how you want to win with your deck. And I think that's one of the most important things to think about. Because here you had a great start because you have a collection of cards that work awesome together. You're utilizing the tribal interaction of Champion of the Parish. You've got a good sound plan, you know, blinking your Detain guys, holding back your opponent's creatures, and just winning through just beat down. And right now that works really well. But I think you just need one more way to win, because if they can just slaughter games your Champion of the Parish or just get rid of the one that's on the battlefield, you're going to be a little hard up for a win condition unless you can drop that Geist, throw some balloon pants up on him, or be able to detain, you know, his way through and crack for 6 couple turns. You just need one more win condition, I think, here, and you need to kind of perfect and tune that sideboard after you play this for a while and learn what you're going to look for and what you need in those certain matchups.
Yeah.
And maybe, if you're starting to cut some of the 4 drops, 23 land might be 1 or 2 land too much.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah, it's just going to be a lot of playtesting to see what fits, what I need. And yeah, I would love to have 4 Geists, but we're going to see currently with monetary value, see what happens there. It's definitely something I want, something definitely I've thought of. I mean, because a lot of times whenever you look at any blue-white tempo deck, Geist is definitely a good place to start, since he is such a powerful card and can do such powerful things. So it's just going to be a matter of figuring out how to obtain them, and then figuring out the right number, etc. But
yeah, and definitely is kind of a slow process when you're first starting out building decks. Like people like Mike Flores, BDM, Patrick Chapin, they can all just kind of brew decks, you know, while they're sleeping, because they understand how the metagame works. They've done this for years. They are champion deck builders whose decks have gone on to place at high-level events, and they get the game. And I think that's the big thing, is that you and I, we understand the game. We can play the game pretty well, but we don't get the game like they get the game. It's become part of their blood, part of their life, and it's just second nature when they jump onto a kitchen table with some friends. They've got the whole set in front of them, four of each card. Build the best deck you can in the metagame. They can do that kind of thing, whereas we see an interaction, we see something fun, and we're like, hey, let's try and break that. Let's just tinker with it just a little bit. And I think that our Johnny in us forces us to do that, but we still want to win. And that's where we really have to think hard about other people's decks, because a lot of what your deck does is so dependent on what other people's decks are going to do to you. And you've got a great start here, Matt, and I know that you're going to go ahead and revise it and tinker with it and play with it, and you're going to dream big, and hopefully you can put this deck together. And you know what? One of the best places to do that is on Magic Online. The Champion of Parish in real life is like $6, but a Champion of Parish on Magic Online is at least half of that. I know that before rotation, I paid maybe $1.50 for Champion of the Parish online. And so, unless he's, skyrocketed in price somehow, he's probably only about $2, maybe $2.50 on MTGO. And, if you look at some of the other cards that you're thinking, the Geist of St. Traps, they're about $30 in real life here, paper magic. But on MTGO, you're going to pay about $10 less.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know you have an MTGO account. It's the stocky, isn't it?
It is, indeed.
It is the stock. See, a little.
You can just find me everywhere with that. Yeah. So yeah, that's definitely something now that, I mean, I have a lot more downtime now that my workload at school has been decreasing. It's definitely something that I'm going to probably, the next step with figuring out this deck is definitely go online with it, buy the cards on there, and just figure out this deck. And, even if I figure out that it's really great and I just don't feel like spending the money then in real life, then it's like, well, I've still got this fun deck online at least. So that's definitely the next step, hopefully.
Yeah, and online, I just want to talk a little bit about that, because I know that you play online, and I've played online for about a year and a half now. And MTGO is, I think, one of the best things you can do for getting better at Magic. When we recorded our second episode originally, I kind of did a little walkthrough for newer players with the whole home screen and everything on the older client. And I'm going to go ahead and skip that for now, but I'm just going to kind of tell you the benefits and why you should jump on and play with MTGO as a new player trying to get better at Magic. One of the biggest things I can tell you about MTGO in my experience is that I became a much better player because the whole game is mapped out for you on there. You can't break any rules. You physically cannot break the rules. The game will tell you, no, you cannot do that. And so you really learn how the cards interact. You learn about triggers. You can experiment with stacking triggers in different ways. And there are so many new things you come across and new ways to think about the game that for $10, which is the cost of an MTGO account, you get $10 worth of product in your account when you sign up. So it's essentially free. You're just kind of paying to start yourself up. For $10, it is worth just playing in the new player room with the cards you're given. You don't have to buy any cards. They give you enough cards where you can jump into a new player room with players that were given their own sets of cards, and you can't use any outside cards. It's basically almost a limited format. You can learn so much from just playing that it's worth the $10 just to play around with it. After that, you can go ahead and buy entire collections of cards. Entire sets. If I want to buy the entire Mercadian Mask set, I can spend a hell of a lot of money in buying the entire Mercadian Mask set online. I can't redeem it because it's so old that they don't allow redemptions for that old of sets. But if I were to buy the entire Return to Ravnica set, spend 25 on each Jace I wanted, even though I have 4 in paper and 0 online. I could buy 4 online. And then if I buy one of each card in the set, I can redeem the set, and they'll mail me the paper cards in about a week. And it's a great way to, A, pay for cards cheaper online, and then when you're done playing online with that set, you can just simply redeem the set, and it'll come to your mail with all the cards from your online collection now in paper. You'll lose them online, but you get them in paper. And I did that with a full set of Innistrad. And so I've got, you know, my Snapcaster Mage, my Garrick, my Liliana, all those cards I have ended up using in standard games before, and they came from online. And I paid a lot less for them online. Snapcaster's going for $25 in real life. It's $6 online. And I think, like, MTGO is not only cheaper, but you can play whenever you want to. And that was a big benefit for me. Matt, I know, like, you kind of have a little bit of a screwy schedule being in college, and that's when I started playing, was when I was in college. And, you know, right now, for you, what is it, like, almost 11?
Yeah, it's about to be 11. Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
I'm on time. You're on Goal Central time, where I grew up. And so if your friends are, like, sleeping because they have, you know, class tomorrow, like an 8 a.m. or something, and you just want to bum out and play Magic, there's no better place to do that than Magic Online, where you're going to have quality opponents. You know, sometimes people can be rude, but it's an online experience. It's nothing as bad as Xbox Live, which I actually just got an Xbox since our last episode. And I've been playing around with that. No one's told me about my mother yet, but I haven't really played many online games. So I have yet to experience this.
You're not playing Call of Duty enough, then.
I know. I want to get the new one when it comes out in, like, 2 weeks. I'm also going to get Halo.
Yes.
Dude,
yes.
Are you going to get Halo?
I am. I'm going to might have to say goodbye to Magic for a little bit. That and Assassin's Creed 3 just came out,
I
need to work on this.
Yeah, no, let's talk privately about our new
yes,
Xbox obsession.
Yes.
MTGO, in terms of cost, you're spending a lot less, and the weird thing about it, I think, for everybody, is that you're not getting the real cards. And I know that you kind of felt that a little bit too, which I think is part of your little standoffish and jumping into that, just because it's not the real thing. You don't know the people you're playing against. Am I right there?
Yeah. I mean, I've gotten over that more and more. I still need to a little bit, but it's definitely something that new players, I feel, you know, they're a bit scared because they're like, I'm putting all this money into something I don't have, but it's just definitely something you need to realize, like, it's a bit cheaper than what you'll get in real life. And then on top of that, it's, you know, you still get the same joy of just playing Magic. You probably get to play more of it this way. And it's just something that you need to get used to. And once you do, though, it's no problem at all.
Yeah, and I know you had some questions for me, too, about MTGO. Do you want to go ahead and ask a couple of those?
Yeah, so the biggest thing I know, especially for if you're starting off new, which is what I did probably a couple months ago, is the best way to probably just start your collection, because they're going to give you the $15 worth of product or $10, whatever it is, and but that's nowhere really near what you need to start building a deck and really just start building up your collection. So what's the best way to build up your collection, would you say?
Well, I think, like, part of it is that you need to focus on tickets and how that all kind of the economy works on Magic Online. And the biggest thing that I figured out was that you always want to sell your booster packs you win either to human players or to bots and get some tickets and kind of just work on getting those staple cards. You know, one of the first things that I did when Innistrad came out was I bought up all the dual lands. And it was funny because I was listening to the A-Team, and Jay Boosh, who's usually the one very profane member of the A-Team, more so than everybody else, that's kind of what he does, too. When new sets come out, he just buys all the dual lands, and he pays a lot of money for them, you know, when they first come out, but he makes sure that he has those, because that's going to allow you to play any deck that you want. And if you don't have the money for all of them, buy the colors that you want. So, Matt, get all the Hollowed Fountains you can find.
Yep.
And then, when the Crash comes out, I am going to buy Godless Shrine after Godless Shrine. And it will be a heathen amount of Godless Shrines, and it will be awesome. Because, you know what, I just want to play Orzhov so bad. I've got a couple of the good old Sorins. and I'm ready to play like black-white tokens, splashing some green, maybe a little populate in there. I'm so excited for junk tokens when Gatecrash comes out. I think my girlfriend has heard the word junk token more than she has heard I love you, which is a little disturbing.
Yikes. Someone's sleeping on the couch tonight.
Unfortunately, no, I'm not. I have to sleep next to a crazy little kitten who likes to eat my feet. That is the state of things. But MTGO is, as I think, a very good deal. And if you're not looking to spend a ton of money on cards, you know, get the staples and then just slowly build up your collection over time by maybe winning some standard matches, by looking for free bots. You can, if you go to like the trading, the classified ads they're called in the old client. I think they're still called classified in the new client, but it could be
they
wrong.
Are.
Okay, yeah, which is kind of funny. They call them classified, but sure, we'll go with it. You know, it's a little Craigslisty. But the there are bots out there that will give you cards for free, and if you just search free, you'll be able to find a bunch of them that are available to you.
Yeah. So. Other than that, the next thing, probably, it's also kind of related to price, since a lot of people in Magic like Limited. They really like to draft. I know you do. I know I do. A lot of people do. But, you know, drafting can get expensive, but you don't really notice that ever if you're just going to FNMs, because, you know, it's once a week, drop your $14 or $15. But on Magic, it suddenly Magic Online, it suddenly opens up a whole new world of you can draft whenever you want. So I guess what's the best way to limit yourself from doing too much limited? And then from there, you know, what's the best way to afford it? Because, you know, you hear a lot of people say go infinite, but for a lot of people, that's not going to be the easiest thing to do. So what is your suggestion?
I think, like, both of those questions kind of come to a pinnacle or a point at Swiss drafts. If you draft 8-4s or 4-3-2-2s, which are two different... There are two different styles of drafting online. There are two different prize payout structures. You're going to either lose in the first round, lose in the second round, or win or lose in the finals. And at that point, if you lose in the first round, you've spent maybe a half an hour to 45 minutes drafting and building your deck. And then you've spent another maybe 45 minutes tops actually playing Magic. And at that point, you've now only spent about, you know, maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours with a little bit of downtime in between, you know, playing MTGO. That's not a lot of time when you could be spending, you know, maybe about 2.5 to 3 hours, depending on how long your matches go, playing Swiss drafts. And the Swiss payout, instead of, you know, the winner gets 8, the loser of the finals gets 4, and then in 4-3-2-2s, the winner gets 4, the loser of the finals gets 3, and then the next top two players get 2 packs each. You know, if you play Swiss drafts, you can win 1 pack for 1 game match you win, another pack if you win the next match, and a third pack if you win the third match and go 3-0. So only one person gets all 3 packs, but you get to play a lot more Magic, you're guaranteed to play a lot more Magic, and you learn a lot more playing all that, you know, all those games, because you're going to play 6 games of Magic, at least. You might even play 9 if you just take every 1 to 2-1 or 1-2 every match. And I think that Swiss drafting, well, you're not going to go infinite with that ever, because it costs 2 tickets to play, and then you can only win 3 packs, which is as much as you need. So even if you win every single Swiss draft, you're still losing 2 tickets every time you play. You're going to learn a lot, you're going to improve a lot, and it's going to take a while to get through each draft. So in the end, you haven't spent as much money because you're just spending more time playing. And as a newer player, that's exactly what you want to be doing. You don't want to be spending money to lose. You want to be spending money to win a little bit and losing a little bit and learning a whole lot. And I think that Swiss drafts kind of afford both angles to your question, in that you can kind of slow yourself down from drafting too much. Because when I get home from work, I get home at about 6 o'clock, which is pretty late to get home from work. But I start late. I start at 9. And so when I get home from work at 6, I eat a little bit of dinner, you know, and I just kind of hang out a little bit. So it's like 7, maybe 7:30. I jump in a Swiss draft, and by the time I'm done, it's like 9:30, 10 o'clock-ish, and it's like getting late at that point. And I don't want to jump in another draft. So if I'm drafting once a day, and I go 2-1, A pack online costs me about 3 to 4 tickets and 2 tickets to draft. So if I'm spending $5 a day on Magic, that's pretty good for some people. You know, and you wouldn't draft every day because I have a girlfriend and she doesn't want me to draft every day. You know, she might want me to watch TV with her or hang out or be a civilized person and go outside for once, which I'm doing because I love to draft.
I know that feeling.
Yeah. And so, you know, I just can't draft every day because I have other things in my life that I have to do. Like maybe I have to actually do housework and I actually have to do the dishes once I get done recording. And that's not even on her request. I just got to do them because they're there. So, you know, I haven't drafted tonight. I drafted about 2 days ago was the last time I drafted. And I drafted Swiss because, you know what? It ate up a lot of time. I had a lot of fun. And I learned a lot about, you know, what not to draft and that 4 colors is probably not a viable way to draft.
You're right. 5 is.
Yeah, exactly. 5 colors, man. That's the way to do it. So in terms of, like, drafting on a budget, like, Swiss drafts are the way to go. And then 8-4 is, I think, if you're a good player, you can win a lot at that point. 8-4s are the best draft to go to if you're very confident in your ability, because you're going to win a lot more packs on average, and you're going to face, you know, good competition, but not impossible competition. And I think that for good players out there who are looking to start an MTGO, you know, accomplished players who've played at a few, you know, maybe Grand Prix trials, who have played in PTQs, who really have pushed themselves to be good players and have posted good results, that's exactly what you're looking for, is the 8-4s, and you can potentially go infinite with those.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, you hear a lot of people saying if, you know, your win percentage is higher than 50%, go the 8-4, if not, go Swiss. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just finding, you know, where you're having most success, and then when you're good enough, move up and just keep winning.
Yeah, just keep winning is kind of the motto.
If only that were that simple.
Exactly, yeah. No, I wish I could just keep winning. If my Magic was like my fantasy football, life would be a lot easier.
Oh, big man on campus over here.
I know. I'm not even on campus. Well, kind of. I sort of work on campus, but not for University of Colorado. But, no, my fantasy football team is just wrecking. I'm 7-1 right now, and I wish my Magic was just like that. But hopefully I'll be able to play some Magic this weekend. I have a day off on Sunday, and so I'm going to watch football. I'm going to draft Magic. It's going to be a good weekend. How about you? What are you up to, man?
I mean, I might have to join you then on Sunday, jump in on a draft with you.
That sounds like a plan. We'll have to do an MTGO draft together and maybe even face each other in the third round in the finals.
Yes.
All right. That's the way to do it, man. Well, this has been MTGO WinCon. MTGO WinCon. Ooh, I even added an O there. MTGO WinCon. Talking about MTGO today and talking about, you know, brewing and kind of getting yourself to a point where you're really thinking about your deck and thinking about what you can accomplish by brewing and taking your little creation, your loving little well-worn deck into an FNM and really trying to beat some face down with it. If you have any questions, comments, criticism, you can contact us, mtgwincon@gmail.com. I'm Zach. My Twitter handle is HelloZado, Z-A-D-O.
And I'm Matt. My Twitter handle is TheStocky, T-H-E-S-T-O-C-K-Y.
And you can find him on LiveJournal at livejournal.com/TheStocky, XXX. I think there's an underscore somewhere. I think there's an underscore. But
spicy.
Yeah, this has been WinCon Episode 2. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I hope you join us next week. We'll probably talk a little bit more about MTGO and the ensuing draft that is bound to happen this weekend. Have a wonderful night, everybody, and thanks for joining us.
Have a good night, everyone.